Hello and welcome back, everyone. You're listening to IASA's Additional Coverage Podcast, episode number 30. I'm your host, Tim Hicks. And joining me for today's additional coverage, I'm pleased to welcome today's guest, Christopher McDaniel. Hello, Christopher. It's great to have you here.
Great to be here. Thank you for having me.
Christopher is the president of the Catastrophe Resiliency Council at the Institutes, with whom, as I mentioned in the last podcast, IASA has just recently partnered. Christopher has more than 30 years' experience in the financial services industry, with extensive experience in the property and casualty, reinsurance, and life and annuity space. Today, Christopher is going to talk to us about the implications of artificial intelligence in catastrophe modeling. But first, I would like to take a moment to recognize and express my appreciation for the support that we receive from IASA's member companies and volunteers. IASA is the voice of the insurance industry. If your company is not already a member, I encourage you to consider all the benefits that come with membership in IASA. Find out more at IASA.org. Well, Christopher, I love this topic. You're taking two emerging trends and making them work together for the betterment of the insurance industry and its policyholders. So let's familiarize our listening audience with each one, and then we'll talk about how you're helping make them work together. So first off, catastrophe modeling. We have certainly had experiences with catastrophes on a global scale, but what exactly are you modeling? How does that work?
Yes, what I call classical catastrophe modeling, it has been around for a good while now. And there's lots of expertise, lots of folks in the industry that really focus in this area. And it's really all about trying to estimate risk ahead of a catastrophe happening, whether that be flood, earthquake, a wildfire, whatever, and to gather as much data as possible in order to be able to run models to predict the impact of risk in a particularly catastrophe situation. So the kind of data that's gathered is classical data, as I call it, is things like, age of roof, things like that, and that information is gathered. And that way you can determine your risk before the catastrophe, or at least estimate your risk before the catastrophe actually happens. And the models have gotten pretty sophisticated over the years, but the tools, unfortunately, have not. A lot of it's still done with spreadsheets and things like that. So there's not a lot of tools out there to really support it. And AI is one that promises a lot of good possibilities to improve that.
Okay, well, then let's pivot to artificial intelligence. It's such a big buzzword, but it certainly has its fair share of misunderstanding and concerns about risk. Talk to us about AI as you know and understand it.
Sure, absolutely. So despite all of the movies that feature, Skynet and all these different AI intelligences taking over the world, that's really not where we're at with artificial intelligence at this point. Artificial intelligence really grew out of the predictive modeling space and being able to look at large quantities of data and to be able to predict trends that were not necessarily, you were able to predict them just by looking at the data with the naked eye or using spreadsheets and things like that. So, really what it comes down to is, from an AI standpoint is really, looking at the data from a machine-based perspective and being able to determine different trends and things like that in an automated fashion. So that's really what it comes down to with AI. Unfortunately, or fortunately, depending on the way you look at it, a lot of people have been exposed to ChatGPT and some of these other AI chatbots that are out there that can really, improve and, go out and crawl the web and put together some pretty impressive results. But the problem is that they really don't have any way of eliminating false positives. It's kind of like, garbage in, garbage out, if you will. So, everybody knows there's a lot of good information out there on the internet. There's also a lot of bad information, and AI can't tell the difference. So when it goes out and looks at all this data to try to give you a result, sometimes you get a good result and sometimes you get back a picture and somebody has, seven fingers on one hand, that kind of thing. So there's lots of bias and discriminations that can come into play when you're using AI. And so you have to be very careful about that. But in the end, it's all about looking at large volumes of data and picking out trends that a human being couldn't do on their own.
How would you go about filtering out the bad information, the bad data?
Well, that's the challenge. That's the challenge. And if you're looking at the internet as a whole, it's a lot harder to do because obviously you don't have control of all that data out there. But in what we're looking at doing from a CAT modeling standpoint, you would hope that our data would be a lot cleaner. And I can talk about that more in just a bit, but on how we're looking to gather that data and normalize it. But the goal is to get clean data in. If you get clean data in, then your AI results coming out will be much, much better. And that's the way you help to prevent, not necessarily 100% eliminate, but help to prevent bias and discriminations that pop up in AI.
Okay, so now for the million-dollar question. What can AI bring to CAT model?
So there's a couple of different areas that really come into play here. And, one is obviously from the modeling perspective itself, being able to pick out those trends and large volumes of data that can't be done, easily by a human being. So AI right there lends a great benefit in being able to comb through that data and to pull out those perspectives. But one of the things that I think is often overlooked, and I think is one of the key factors of what AI can potentially do for us in this space, is there's lots of data out there, good, clean data that's out there, but there's many, many, many sources. So you may have government sources such as FEMA that have data. You may have municipalities that have gathered data about their area, risk data. You may have data from various vendors that they put together. There are just so many different sources, hundreds of sources that are out there. And everybody's done their own thing. Everybody's created that. When they created those sources, they've utilized their own formats and ways of doing things. So you've got a lot of good data that really you can't just put all in one bucket and be able to get something good out of it. So I think one of the major opportunities from an AI standpoint is actually in normalization of data across disparate sources. So you've got 10 different sources, all of them are in a different format, but you know what kind of data you're trying to put together. You use AI to look and determine the patterns within those different data that are common, and you normalize that data into a common format. Now you've got something that, again, AI can run against. But I think, using AI on the front end to actually get normalized, clean data is something that's often overlooked. Everybody likes the glamorous, oh, we can run these models and get these cool results. And that's great. But it can also be a workhorse on the front end just to get you clean data in the first place. And I think that's going to be a huge factor.
Sure. Like you said, garbage in, garbage out. It's only as good as the person that's putting the information together, right? How do you use that to model? In your speeches, you talk about the open exposure model. Can you give us a little more insight into that?
Yeah, absolutely. So one of the things that we're working on at the Catastrophe Resiliency Council is creating something called the Open Exposure Model, or OXM. And what that does is it really expands on that classical data. So, I mentioned, classical data, things like age of roof, things like that, data that's readily available. But there's a lot of other data that is out there that could be very interesting. Again, if you can use AI to normalize it on the front end, there's a lot of other very interesting data that could be layered on top of that classical data. So, for example, post-catastrophe loss data. So everything about CAT modeling is about looking at the data before the catastrophe actually happens and modeling that risk. Well, what if you could also take the data after the catastrophes happen and use that historical data of past catastrophes to bring that in, make that a layer on top to help to refine your data? What if you could do things like have infrastructure data on top of it? And there's vendors out there that are specializing in getting this kind of data. So when I say infrastructure, things like, where are the gas pipelines? Where are the railroad tracks? Where are the electric grids? Things like that, all things that can contribute to determining the risk footprint of a location. So getting that kind of data, getting even economic data and being able to layer that on top of it. So when I say economic data, I mean if you have a situation where you have an industrial plant on the coast and a hurricane is going to come in and it's going to shut it down for 4 weeks. What's the economic impact of that? What would you be able to say, what are the losses for the area economically, not just for that plant, but for the trucks that bring in the deliveries for the products for that plant, et cetera. So you could really layer all of that data. And when you start thinking about all of that data and all those multiple layers, that's a lot of data to do manually. But with AI, once you normalize that data and get it into a good, clean format that it can recognize, it can go through all that data and look at trends and give you some really interesting perspectives across the, all of those types of data very easily. That's what AI is good at doing. So it really could give you a whole different perspective. You know, one of the examples that I like to use to explain how this would work, folks will probably have seen on election night how the different cable news networks, you know, have their giant wall and they can drill down into a district and look at what the results are going to be or what they perceive the results are going to be, that kind of thing. Well, imagine if you could do that exact same thing, but with risk data. So there's a huge hurricane that's coming in. It's going to hit New Orleans, and somebody on the cable news network with their map, and they have all this data behind them. They could say, well, if the hurricane hits this section of New Orleans, we can drill down in that and we can see, oh, here's what the impact is. Oh, there's a levee right there. That levee might break. So that's an extra risk, and have that risk calculated, be able to see. And if the water comes in at this level, here's what the economic impact is that area, and be able to drill in and out and be able to see all of that data. That's a very, very powerful tool when you have that both for risk and insurance and being able to model stuff. But for a wide variety of folks, that kind of an audience, that data would be very interesting.
That is my aha moment for this podcast. It's like, okay, so we can model based on the strength of a hurricane and depending on where it hits land and what infrastructure is in that specific area. Here we can say with a certain amount of certainty that this levee will hold or won't hold based on the infrastructure and engineering information that we have. So you get not only here's what's coming, but here's what's going to happen. I love that. That's just awesome. Is there any product out there that does this already yet, or is it still being modeled?
No, it's still being put together. We're working on that now. You know, the model is the first part. One of the things that we're doing right now is we're doing a proof of concept where we're gathering multiple sources, normalizing that data, showing that we can actually get the data that's needed. But following that, we're going to be building an infrastructure, building a product, if you will, that actually can do what we're talking about doing. Now, as you can imagine, it's a pretty complex product to build that. It's not going to be something that's going to be available in the next 6 months, but over the next 24 months, we're very hopeful that we'll be able to get something out there that can do exactly what we're talking about.
And one thing that I've seen in your presentation is something called Tempest. What is Tempest?
Yes, so Tempest is the working name, and it may very well change when the marketers get a hold of it, but that's the working name for the product that we're looking to put together. So Tempest, you know, you mentioned that, you know, that we're bringing together CAT modeling and AI. Well, if we do Tempest the way we're talking about, and again, it's still early days in designing it, but if we do Tempest the way we're talking about, not only does it bring together AI and the CAT modeling, but it also brings together blockchain from a security and a transparency standpoint. So what you wind up with is not only this data that we're talking about, but you have an interface on the front end so that someone can say, here's 100 different potential data sources that I could pull from. I want this one, this one, this one, this one. They pick which ones that they want. AI does this thing, normalizes that data, gives them a data set, and then they can run their models against it. They run their model and they're like, something looks weird here. This, you know, something's not right. So we have a interface that allows them to step back through the data and to be able to say, oh, here's the problem. We're looking at New Orleans again. And one of our data sets for our risk information was pulled during the period of Mardi Gras, when the data was a lot different than it was during the rest of the year, during hurricane season, which is in the fall. And so that data is an anomaly. So let's pull that source out and rerun the data again now to get our model. So that's something that just does not exist today, is the ability to pick and choose various data sources and to be able to slice and dice and figure out where your issues are and have that level of transparency. And also the blockchain side of it as well gives us a very advanced permissioning. So we can have data coming in from a subscription service. So maybe you subscribe to a vendor for data. And if you do, then you have access to that data. But the next guy that's using it doesn't have access to that data. We can turn off that permissioning on the sources that you can use all the way down to the field level so that you can say what data. You can also use that to anonymize data so there's no personal information data out there and things like that. So it gives you really very, very deep level of flexibility on controlling the data that's seen and not seen depending on who the user is. So it gives you a lot of flexibility. The other thing that's going to be part of Tempus as well is this, you know, we talk about it from the data modeling standpoint, and you know, that's our core goal is for our data modelers out there to have this kind of tool at their fingers. But there's a lot of applications that have been built or will be built in the future that would love to have access to this data coming in to utilize for various reasons. So having an API layer, an application programming interface layer, and an easy way for applications to connect to this data is also something that's on the table for the Tempus product down the road.
That is just so impressive. And then, of course, the downstream software products that use that information will have all kinds of data at their fingertips that they can just pick and choose from and make it make sense. So,
yeah,
it's just incredible.
Yeah. Let me throw one downside in there, because I do think it's important to highlight it. One downside is there's a deep level of knowledge on the folks that are out there that are manually modeling this data now. The one danger of AI is that AI does such a good job that we start losing that knowledge for people to be able to do it themselves. So that is one danger in AI, is you become too dependent on AI to do the heavy lifting for you. So I will put that out there as one of the things that we have to be cautious about.
You're absolutely right. That's a point well taken. Well, listen, that's about all the time we have for today's podcast. But Christopher, if our listeners would like to reach out to you, what's the best way they can reach you?
Yeah, they can reach me by email, probably the best way. They can get me personally at my email address is mcdaniel@theinstitutes.org. The other thing I would encourage them to do is we have a catastrophe and climate hub that we've set up called the Anchorage. So I would encourage them to go there too. Lots of great information on all of this stuff and a lot of other things that are happening in space. And the address for that is theanchorage.info. So we can get a lot of good information there as well.
And if you have any comments about the show or any show suggestions, you can always email me at tim.hicks@fisglobal.com. You can also find me on LinkedIn. Hey, be on the lookout for new episodes coming out every other week. We've got some really great, interesting content coming up. Until then, I'm Tim Hicks with today's guest, Christopher McDaniel. I really appreciate you taking your time and sharing your expertise with us.
Thanks for having me.
Take care and be well. If you enjoyed this episode, please do us a huge favor and subscribe to the podcast so that you never miss a new episode. If you have coworkers that need to know about this podcast, let them know about the show so they can also follow along. Thank you for listening. We'll see you next time.